Well, hello out there in podcast land, and welcome back to Guilty Pleasures, the show where we celebrate the movies we love, despite what critics, public opinion, or even our own God-given sense might tell us. I'm your host, Lou Hare, for the Front Row Network, and welcome to another episode that I have been looking forward to for a while, because it means we get to have some of our favorite guests back on to talk about a movie that they requested. I can't wait to get into it. So please welcome back to the Front Row and to Guilty Pleasures, the Disneyland Foodies, starting off with Amanda Hasica. How's it going, Amanda?
Hey, how are you?
I am well. Thank you for coming back.
Thanks for having us.
The last time we had you on was for the Norbit episode.
It was rough.
A few months have passed and you're still speaking to me, so I appreciate that.
Yeah. You know, time heals all wounds, so.
Thank you. Yes. All right. And joining us again, also from the Disneyland Foodies, please welcome back Kara Hasica. How's it going, Kara?
Hi. I'm so excited to be on today's episode. This is one of my favorite topics, favorite movies. I'm so ready.
Yes. Good. Good. I already feel this will be a much more positive experience than our Norbit episode. Which you can go back in here in the archives for a little bit of context. But yes, so when we had Kara on last time, she had mentioned that her favorite guilty pleasure was the movie that we are choosing to do this evening, and that is Mamma Mia, Here We Go Again. Pretty recent. This is one of the most recent guilty pleasures we've done. Only a year old.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I'm very much excited to dig into it. So, a quick plot summary. This is from IMDb. 5 years after the events of Mamma Mia, Sophie prepares for the opening of the Hotel Belladonna as she learns more about her mother's past. It stars pretty much everybody from the first movie the screen time is changed a little, which I'm sure we'll get into. But we have added Lily James playing the young Donna, the young Meryl Streep character, several young actors portraying younger versions of the characters from the first Mamma Mia. And then, of course, Cher, who I cannot wait to talk about because she just blew my mind in this movie. It is directed by Ole Parker, who I'm assuming, old to me. I mean, I don't know what nationality that is, but I feel like it needed like an apostrophe on there, like the, you know.
Old Parker
air.
Oh, I was thinking Ole, because it's like, isn't it like O-L-E? Ole.
Ole.
Or I think it's O-L. Yeah, O-L.
You're just O-L. Mm-hmm. I think he did like the second, the Alva Marigold Hotel movies, right?
Yes. I think, yes.
But I've heard those are good.
Yes. I haven't seen them either, but yeah.
He does only delightful films.
Yeah. Delightful ensemble pieces.
Exactly.
That's fine. That's good.
Nothing wrong with that.
Nope. So this movie is interesting. Typically on Guilty Pleasures, we end up doing movies that are, huge box office bombs or major just epic kind of disasters. This movie's not necessarily that, although I think we can talk about what it does to uphold or diminish the Mamma Mia legacy. But it does fairly well at the box office. It makes $395 million worldwide, which is very good. It's about two-thirds of what the original did. The first one did $600 million worldwide. So if you want to know why they decided we needed two movies filled with ABBA songs, there's your answer.
Yeah. It was like the number one grossing film in England for a while. I think until Avatar was released or something like that. But so the Brits loved it.
Yeah. Love them some ABBA, apparently. And the reviews aren't too bad either. It's got a Rotten Tomatoes score of 81%. Although when you dig into the reviews themselves, the average is about like a 6 out of 10. So it's all like, we're recommending it, but, there was a lot of hedging apparently going on amongst the reviewers. But its IMDb score, though, is actually higher than the first movie. It's at a 6.7, whereas the original's at a 6.4.
Interesting.
So let's dive into it, Kara. I want to hand it over to you first and get your initial thoughts. What is it about Mamma Mia, Here We Go Again, that drew you to it when you first saw it?
Like I said before, it's just pure delight. I love that it's not trying to be anything that it's not. It's just, you know, we're doing it again. Here we go again. They brought back, you know, they reprised a number of songs because they're like, everyone wants to hear Dancing Queen again. Come on. Like, we have to do it again. Mm-hmm. I just love that it's so earnest, you know?
Oh, yeah. No, I would agree with that. Absolutely. Amanda, how about you?
It's just literally, yeah, the definition of like a feel-good movie. It's just something you go and watch and you're going to have a smile on your face the whole time. And I love movies where you can tell the cast had a really good time making it. Like, you can tell that this was like the time of their lives. So I think that definitely comes through on screen, that everyone had a blast doing it because it's a blast to watch. Yeah, and the soundtrack is just, that's probably like all I listened to last summer, I think. I don't think I listened to like any other music besides that. So it's just an enjoyable romp.
Yeah, I had not seen this movie until we watched it for the podcast. I saw the first one and I didn't care for it that much. I was like, this was fine. So I didn't feel the urge to see the sequel. Because I even had heard that it was, well, I mean, it's literally called Here We Go Again. They're just kind of already telling you, yep, we're doing pretty much the same thing we did the last time. Add to what you pointed out, Kara, even the same songs. Like, it's just hilarious to me that they're like, well, we used all the big hits in the first one. Can we do it again? Should we do it again? And boy, howdy, do they do them again.
I'm glad that Waterloo got like a whole, because in the first movie, Waterloo is just kind of the epilogue or whatever, but mm-hmm. I'm glad that Waterloo got its due for this one.
Yes, and that's one of the ones I absolutely want to talk about, because that was the thing that I thought about with this movie, is that there are some moments that are nice and kind of quiet, but then there are some sequences in this movie that are just buck wild. And I was like, the first 30 and the last 30 of these are like just in delightfully bonkers in terms of the staging and what they're doing and some of these things. So interestingly enough, and I had thought about it too. So for those of you who haven't seen it, the movie goes back and forth between events that have happened in the past, the young Meryl Streep's character of Donna, and then following her daughter's character, who, if you don't know, if you didn't read anything or you just looked at the posters, Meryl Streep is not in this movie until the very end because her character is dead.
Yeah. Well, that was a big thing. Like, when the trailer came out, the way they kind of framed it made it kind of ambiguous. Like, I think that they were outwardly trying to, or they didn't want to outwardly say that she's dead, but they definitely were alluding to it. So I remember the big buildup was like, is she dead? Is she alive? What's happening? And so I think we all kind of saw the writing on the wall, though, with that trailer.
Yeah. And so I did a little research on it, and Meryl Streep was initially hesitant to do a sequel. She'd never done a sequel in her life. And so she was a little hesitant. And I think that's where they had to reconstruct the story, because they were like, well, we got a sequel, but we may or may not have Meryl Streep. And this movie gets inspiration from a very odd source. It was actually inspired by the film Godfather 2, which, if you haven't seen Godfather 2, it's literally like, this is literally like if Godfather 2 was a musical, because the narrative of Godfather 2 is one timeline is existing past the events of the Godfather. So we're following Al Pacino's character after Marlon Brando's character has died in the first one. And then the second is a prequel that shows Robert De Niro as a young Marlon Brando rising to power and how he became the Don. So it's insane to me that like 40 years later, we're getting a Godfather 2 inspired musical, which is, I think, exactly what we needed.
Yeah.
So let's get into some scenes here. And talk about some of the, because I think really that's what we want to get into is some of these musical numbers. Where do we want to, Kara, where do you want to start? What number do you, jumps to mind?
Let's start from the beginning. Okay.
When I kiss the teacher.
Yes. Let's kick it off.
I mean, the costumes are great. Mm-hmm. I love the costumes. I love the choreography. I love their little things they do with like their arms that they like put above their head and the way they like kind of move their hips and stuff. It's so good.
I appreciate that they opened with a kind of lesser known ABBA song, and turns out I love it. It really sets the tone for the rest of the film, and it's, you know, again, it's storytelling throughout. It's okay, she's graduating, she's moving on to the next chapter in her life, but yet it's fun. You get Donna's energy, like she's fun loving and silly and a little wild.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's a good choice to start it because it really does let you know that, you know, okay, Meryl Streep is not here. You know, Lily James is really good in this movie. And like that energy comes through in that first scene. Like she is selling it hardcore. She's like, she's going for it and it's great. That number I find fascinating because it's got, like you said, it's got so much energy and choreography, and then it just has all of these weird things going on. Like at some point, so she planned to sing that song. That was her plan, right?
They were wearing those costumes and everything underneath, so I think that was, yeah, it was like a premeditated kind of thing.
Because then it like devolves into like a flash mob scenario where everyone in the audience knows what's going on and they're singing along too. They apparently know the words. And then the teacher, who seemed to be dismayed by this, comes in with she's like, well, I guess I'm going to go with it. And she breaks out and she gets a verse of her own too.
She certainly does. Yeah. I find that I had not even heard of this song until they like showed the clip for like promoting this movie, and I just remember seeing it. I remember thinking it was weird when you see it on its own and seeing it before I had seen the movie. I remember thinking it was very weird and I wasn't sure how the movie was going to turn out, but when you see it in the context of everything else, it makes much more sense. But yeah, it's interesting. It shows, yeah, she's playful and she's fun, and it shows off the little, you know, because in the first movie, the big thing is Donna and the Dynamos, and they're always kind of teasing that and talking about that. So it's nice to kind of just see it kick off with that. And so you get a feel for, you know, how she was in her youth and all that. So,
yeah. And everybody seems to just be drawn into her because they're able to just, you know, she leads them all out like this Pied Piper. And then they have, and like it culminates outside, and they're still using the mics, which I thought was a very interesting choice. They're like, yeah, I mean, they have a great sound system. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
Well, it's a musical. You got to suspend all disbelief and just roll with it, you know?
Yes. And they are telling you that right off the bat with this one. They're like, no, just, it's okay, folks. It's going to be silly. And don't get me wrong, I'm here for all of it. But it felt very much like they're doubling down on it because they're like, okay, we gotta like knock them on their butts like right at the beginning. And they choose an odd song to go with, but like, because it's a bit of a deep cut. And that's the one thing I noticed in this movie is they do the like the quintessential ABBA songs, but then because they can't use them all from the first movie, some of these are a little more of the B-sides, I think.
Yeah.
But they make it work in that first number.
Yeah, I really am impressed how they were able to take all of these songs and put them into a plot that makes sense and is, you know, for the most part. That was just so surprising to me. I'm like, wow, like how did ABBA have all these songs that just like would perfectly fit into this sequel? I don't know, it's crazy.
Yeah, and I think some of that is the 70s were a really good time for storytelling in songs. Like there's a lot of like the old singer-songwriters that would just tell, you know, the, and I think you can look at there's a Billy Joel musical, there's a Queen musical. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of like 70, there's an Elton John musical. There's like a lot of musicals based off of that kind of era of music. And I think a lot of that is a lot of these songs do tell stories within them. And so it's like, okay, if we can link them together somewhat, we can put together, we can make it feel like it all was, this was all intended at some point.
Yeah. It's weaved together very nicely. Mm-hmm.
So that musical, that number leads into the next one that I want to talk about. Oh, well, I guess, never mind. First, ballad. we have the ballad with Sophie and Sky, one of us, which I don't have, a whole.
That's the fast forward song.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. It's there.
Every musical has one. It's the fast forward song.
Right. Yeah. It's like, okay, we got to. And it's, that's the funny thing that I noticed about this movie, that it's the one attempt to like inject some sort of tension or conflict in the movie. And all of it's just resolved so easily. It's like, oh, he might not be there. Oh, he's here. Oh, yeah. We might not have the party. Oh, we're going to have the party. It's like, you're right. But that gets us to the one I'm very excited to talk about, which is Waterloo between. Oh, my gosh. We could do 30 minutes. Just break it down, this number. So this takes place between young Donna and young Harry. And then, so Harry is the character that ultimately is played by Colin Firth as the older man. So he's played in this by Hugh Skinner. And oh, if there's one guy, like if there's one person in this cast, you mentioned Kara, that looks like they're having fun, it's this guy, because this dude gives he's going for it in every minute he's given.
Yeah. I love all the little, obviously the part, like, they meet each other in France because after Donna graduates college, she's going around and traveling. So they meet in France. So there's the cute little, you know, nods to like Napoleon and Waterloo, et cetera. That's really cute. The choreography, this scene looks like it probably was really intense to film. There's a lot of moving parts. And I like the part when Lily James, literally, she does that thing where she pulls a tablecloth and all the things stay put. That's, I mean, it has that going for it. It has, they pretend like baguettes are swords and they fight with it's just, there's so much going on.
Yeah, I read that Lily James did this number with a broken toe.
Oh my God.
So that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, they're like cartwheels and there are, one thing I thought was cool about that number too is they have a dancer in a wheelchair, which I thought was kind of interesting and like cool, like representation. Mm-hmm. You
know? Yeah. I noticed it too. I thought that was that. Yeah, that was fun. And they, and not as like a punchline or anything, just like, yeah, hey, this is part of what we're doing. And that, like, which was refreshing. Mm-hmm. The part that really, at one point, both of their heads end up on a platter.
I knew that that's what you were going to say.
Wow. I'm like, yeah, again, just like they're steering real hard into the goofiness and I love it. And I was just like, wow, okay. That was a lot of things I could have planned for. Heads on a platter. Not one of them.
Yeah. I love how his jacket like doesn't really fit him. It's so small. It's so small. I mean, he's such a tall guy, it's probably, but it just cracks me up that it's just this like very tight leather jacket he's wearing.
Yeah. So, and like all of this, all of that happens in like the first 20 minutes of the movie. So like this movie's like between those two numbers, this is just like, this movie just kind of like goes from like the beginning. And then we kind of like dip into like the slower songs here and then in about the middle of it. But like, if you were to just like take those numbers alone, you'd be like, oh, this movie is going for it in every, like in every possible iteration.
Yeah.
So Waterloo features two of the young doppelgangers in it. So before I guess we move on to the next musical number, let's take a minute to talk about the young actors playing the old actors and see how they match up. So, you know, everyone has, you know, there's their young doppelganger, young version of themselves. We get all the main characters there. So let's go through, and of the young cast, who do you think did the best job of embodying their older counterpart? Carol, we'll start with you.
We just were talking about Hugh Skinner. I thought he was great, capturing like the awkwardness and like gangliness of Colin Firth. So he was probably my favorite of the youngins.
Well, there's definitely right. Lily James. I mean, she's in a class of her own almost with among these people, the younger counterparts. But I really am fond of the actor who plays young Bill. Like, I could see how you would just fall for that guy. He is very charming and very cute. He has the whole little like long shaggy hair and tan, his little earring. So I'm drawn to him, I have to say. It's funny though, because the actor himself, I started following him on Instagram after the movie came out, but I was like, I don't think I like him. I think I like young Bill specifically.
I just want you in this context. Yeah, this is what Yeah, for me, I think my favorite was Jessica Keenan-Wynn as young Tanya, who the young Christine Baranski character. I thought, you know, Christine Baranski has such a specific kind of delivery and air about her that I thought she captured really well. And I was like, oh, she seemed to me to be the most like her older version. Because I think Lily James is great, but I don't think she's trying to be like a young Meryl Streep, which I think is probably a good thing. Cause I mean, I think that's a fool's errand to try to like imitate Meryl Streep.
Yeah.
But I thought those were all solid choices. I will say, the one criticism that I'd have in terms of their casting of the young doppelgangers is Jeremy Irvine is a much better singer than Pierce Brosnan is.
That's true.
So apparently like Sam's vocal skills diminished as he got older.
Yeah, they didn't have Pierce Brosnan really singing in this one. They learned their lesson. That's like, I tried to get my husband to watch Mamma Mia with me, and I'm like, come on, you'll love it. You know, Pierce Brosnan's in it. Like, that's his James Bond, you know? Mm-hmm. And he's like, no, James Bond singing, that's just so wrong. I can't get behind that.
I mean, if it helps, I don't know if how much it technically qualifies as singing.
Sure.
vocal talking, where it's like harmonized a little bit.
Right. And I love Pierce Brosnan. He seems, you mentioned it earlier, that these characters seem to be having a ball. I feel like he's maybe having the most fun of anybody. He seems to just be like, I know what you all think about me. I'm sure he read the reviews of the first Mamma Mia, and he's like, I don't care. I'm doubling down. I'm back. Y'all can suck it.
Yeah. If anybody's like going to lead a charge for number three, I feel like it would be him. He's going to be like campaigning to have a third one.
Yeah, exactly. He will line up. He'll have the sequin jumpsuit on, ready to go. Because that's the funny thing to talk about some of the older characters, that like everybody else, I feel like all of the like Colin Firth and Stellan Skarsgård and obviously Meryl Streep, they were all like, okay, we're going to come back and do the movie, but we want to shoot all of our scenes in like 3 days or less. Because
definitely
because the other two, Pierce Brosnan stays on the island, the other two, they just ride off for half the movie.
I'd love to know, like, I remember Forgetting Sarah Marshall, I think I listened to the commentary of that movie, and Jack McBrayer, I think his name is, he was saying how he shot all of his scenes in like a week, but stayed for like the entirety of the shoot because they were in Hawaii. And so
right.
I feel like that's kind of how maybe like Colin Firth and everybody, they were like, okay, yeah, no, we'll go and everything. But yeah, I want to be done in 3 days, but I will be in Greece or Croatia, wherever they filmed it, you know, beyond that.
It's the Adam Sandler method. It's if I'm going to be in the movie, it needs to be at a really nice location so I can get a good vacay in.
That's a power move. That's smart.
Yes. Okay. So back to some of the musical numbers. So we got the love ballad, and then we get Waterloo, and we get like five lines of SOS from Sam. But then we get kind of to like some of that middle, like the love story kicks in a little bit. And if I'm being honest, this for me is maybe where the movie lost me just a little bit, is just kind of this middle part. Anything out of these numbers, why did it have to be me, or I have a dream, or there is one I do want to talk about. Anything kind of from that like middle section of the movie that you really want to dive into?
Amanda, you love young Bill, so I think you're partial to Why Did It Have to Be Me.
I love that scene.
I think it's fun on the boat, and they're both having a great time. And
when they do that little like foot move, when they're like walking and they're doing that thing with their feet.
Oh yeah, yeah.
That's so cute.
Like the La La Land of Jace kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's fun. I like that number. And then, you know, even like the whole, when Colin Firth comes in, like it makes sense in the song. It makes sense in the, I'm like, wow, great job.
Yeah, like plot twist at the end. Of. Yeah. Right. Yeah, but then I Have a Dream. That's actually one of my favorite songs. It was on the soundtrack of the first movie, and I'm glad they brought it back for this one. And I think it's just a nice, yeah, slower moment for the movie, and it just sets up, you know, her finding the hotel and everything. So I thought that was a nice number.
Okay. Yeah. And so we bounce back, we spend kind of like the middle of the movie bouncing back between, and then again, it took on like a couple of moments of like, there were a couple of moments where it felt like a clip show version of like a sitcom where they're like, well, let me tell you, that reminds you, remember the time where we, and like, do, 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 and they go back. Cause Pierce Brosnan sets up a couple of scenes. We learn how he and Donna's character got together and then broke up. The one number in that kind of whole sequence that I liked was that I particularly liked was the Kisses of Fire.
Oh yeah.
That, because again, that guy is I want a whole like sub, let's open up the Mamma Mia universe. I want to learn more about that guy and his band and their dreams.
Or one of the ones that I'm not hugely fond of kind of in the middle there is the Knowing Me, Knowing You. They kind of, I don't want to say it's boring, but I like the more upbeat ones and the ones that have more going on with them. So that's one that I'm kind of maybe not as fond of. The Name of the Game, I think that one's good. That's when she kind of finds out about Sam's deal. And I think they've recorded that song for the first one, but it just like wasn't in the movie, because I'm pretty sure it's on the soundtrack, but not an actual movie, but I could be wrong.
Kara, do you got anything else from that kind of section of the any scenes or moments from that kind of middle section of the movie you want to talk about?
Well, I hope we're not skipping over Mamma Mia.
Oh, no, definitely not.
Because I kind of consider that as part of like the middle a little bit, but as long as we give our dedicated time to Mamma Mia.
Okay. Well, we're here. Let's get into it.
That's just my favorite. That and Super Trooper are just my favorites, like scenes and songs. I like that they gave it a different spin, and you actually like listen to the lyrics in her version. You know, like Mamma Mia, the original, you're like bopping around, but this one, you know, you're actually listening like to the lyrics and the story, like I've been cheated by you, and you know, it actually has like a narrative and everything. And it fits perfectly within the narrative of the movie. So, and you know, I just want to be a dynamo when I grow up. You know, you want to be part of the Donna and the Dynamos, you know?
I think Kara and I have discussed this, I think, but I thought that Donna and the Dynamos was actually like a legit girl group where they were legitimately famous and not just like something that they did for fun. And so it was interesting to see, you're like, oh, it was just something that they did. And, you know, it was just like a hobby of theirs almost. Or something.
Well, yeah, because in the first one, they talk about reuniting Donna and the Dynamos, and like, I think that was that was at least the impression I got, was like, was she like formerly a singer and now they live on a Greek island, which was like a couple of leaps plot wise that Mamma Mia asks of you, which is fine, but was like, I'm right there with you. It was like, this is they're apparently just. No, they're just a group that just a couple of friends that just like to sing together. I gave them some, I will say it's a baller move to within your own friend group just give yourself the name Donna and the Dynamo. Because if you're not a famous group, you're like sitting around with your friends. It's like, hey, let's name a group. Me and we'll give you two go get names, right?
Yeah, I'd love to know the origin, how they came across that name, or yeah, because they seem cool with it, so.
Yeah, they're very good friends.
I have to say, like, the fact, I wish I could have been an extra in this movie. Like, that, like, why wasn't I an extra in this movie? When I would even, like, be in the background dancing or something, but everyone just looks like they're having so much fun in this movie, I swear. Like, all the, like, during that Mamma Mia scene and Dancing Queen and all that kind of stuff, you just have these moments of everyone looks like they're having a blast.
They do. Yeah, and that scene that I think Mamma Mia, I actually think that you're right, Kara. The song Mamma Mia, I think, is used better in this movie than it actually is in the first one. Where the first one, it's like, okay, we have to get it in. It's the most famous song. How are we going to figure it out? We're just going to have them sing it. And I also thought it was weird that Mamma Mia is like the second or third song in the first movie, right? It's like, man, you're bringing out the hits early. No one does that. You save that for, you know. Hootie and the Blowfish aren't doing Hold My Hand until second encore or right to the end, you know?
Yeah. One thing I do, so it's Bill's aunt that Donna ends up meeting, right? And that's who she gets the in from and all that kind of stuff. And I'm like, that must be an aunt through marriage or something, because Bill is extremely Swedish and this woman's extremely Greek. So I'm like, I don't see them being like blood relatives.
Yeah, the whole movie, the whole franchise is tied to Greece, still kind of perplexes me.
Very random.
It's very random because ABBA's a Swedish supergroup. Like, there's so, like, you would think like it would be set like in Sweden. If you're going to set it anywhere, it's like, and I don't know the musical. I've never seen is the stage version set in Greece, or was this a film choice?
It's the stages, the Broadway version is in Greece.
Okay.
So it seems so odd that, you know, I'm going to like travel the world. And then she goes a couple places and ends up in Greece. And is like, this is it. I want to live here forever. It's like, what?
I mean, not for nothing. That location is gorgeous. Yeah.
Right. But it's just very random. Like, what drew her there, you know? Yeah.
I feel like there's a reason they chose Greece. Like, somewhere I read somewhere, but I can't remember exactly what. I think there's a reason.
They made Bill Swedish. Mm-hmm. I don't know if Bill's. I don't think Bill is Swedish in the.
No, role? That's an homage to ABBA. Yeah.
So they made him Swedish in the movie.
Yes.
Yeah, that whole part. Yeah, that whole idea was just something that never quite clicked with me. And I was like, well, I guess. I mean, granted, I will not say that I paid the most attention to the first Mamma Mia. You know. So I was a little bit behind on the backstory, but no, it's a gorgeous location. And it's like, that's the other thing about the movie. Like this, like for a summer movie, the whole thing is kind of what you want. It's colorful. It's bright. Like the scenery's gorgeous. It's got beautiful people in beautiful locations, like singing and dancing and being happy. It's everything you kind of want.
Yeah. I think they did a good job too with like the fashion. Is really fun. It's like 70s, but not, doesn't feel super costumey. Like it's stuff that honestly you could see someone wearing probably. It feels sort of timeless, but it's 70s-ish. And they have all those beautiful pieces like when they're doing dance numbers and then like the wind is going, like Amanda Seyfried has that poncho, that colorful poncho. So she's like running around and then the poncho is just flowing in the wind. And so that, yeah, it's a visually very stunning movie.
Mm-hmm. And young Donna and her friends have really, they have some excellent access to jumpsuits.
Oh yeah. Jumpsuits for life.
And I do like how they worked in like the her attachment to overalls, which is what, you know, Donna wears in the Meryl Streep wears in the first movie very famously, which I, again, I don't know the origin of that look. I don't know if Meryl just wanted to be comfortable while she was filming and was like, oh, I need something I can move in. Overalls.
Probably. Yeah. That is cute. It like made, I now own two pairs of overalls. I didn't have overalls before I saw Mamma Mia, or no, I think I did, but I mean, it was an inspiration, let's just say.
Okay. So, okay. So all of that then sets up where I think like this movie, like for me, turned up a notch, because I was watching this yesterday and I was like, okay, it was kind of late and I was like, well, maybe I'll just watch the first half. And then I'll watch the rest. Like, but like once Dancing Queen comes on, like that for the rest of the movie, like I defy anybody to turn it off, because the movie just gets like insane from that moment on.
Yeah. It's like, if you need to pick me up, watch that sequence on YouTube or something. It will give you an instant boost of serotonin. It's lovely.
It is. And it's so like, it's so energetic and fun and like cheesy. And like, they are going at it even further than they did in the first movie. Cause I don't remember like Colin Firth and Stellan Skarsgård being like this broad in the first movie. Am I wrong on that?
No, they really leaned into like just going for it, having fun. They're on the end of the boat doing the Titanic and they're just holding each other and they're just having the time of their lives. And Dancing Queen is just, it's just the perfect song. It's because it's, it lifts your mood, but it's also like emotional. It's weirdly like emotional, it hits you in the heart and you want to like cry sometimes when you hear it, but then you want to dance. And it's just, it's the perfect song.
100% agree. And it's like this moment where it's like finally the cast is all together because they'd spent the rest of the movie. Stellan Skarsgård, by the way, before we get on, my biggest note from the middle section of that movie is they have reasons why both he and Colin Firth aren't on the island for most of the movie. And Stellan Skarsgård's reason is he wins an award for the greatest Swede of all time.
I mean, why wouldn't he?
I think it's hard to argue. I can't think of any greater Swedes, but I didn't even know that that was like a thing.
It definitely is. And he should win it. For sure.
That scene was a little silly with like his twin brother and they don't really explain it at first. And you see him and he's wearing, it's him, but like fat. And you're like, he just, what? He got fat? Okay. And then it's later revealed it's his brother and you're like, oh, okay, sure.
Well, there's a line in the first one when Bill finds out that Sophie doesn't know who her dad is and like it might be Bill or something. And he says something about like, you don't have a twin sister, do you? So I think that's like literally kind of a little callback to that, because obviously if twins run in your family kind of thing. So
sure, but the fat suit is what gets me about it. Why the fat suit?
They didn't want to throw you off.
Yeah, it definitely threw me off.
Yeah, totally. I'm like, oh, is his like character arc that he like let him? Is this a fat Thor thing again?
Yeah, he's depressed. He just like that Donna died. He just loved her so much and went off the rails.
I'd be into that. See, that's probably a little too dark for this movie, but it's just like this like weird throw off kind of visual gag. And I was like, man, for that's a lot of commitment to do the prosthetics and the fat makeup for essentially like a 2-second joke. So yeah. good like, again, Stellan Skarsgård is he's up for anything, including and I'm jumping ahead for a minute, but we'll get back to what is, of all the jumpsuits in the final scene, his V is the deepest V in the history of V's. It stopped, like it really only stopped because his belt was there.
I'd like to see his son in that jumpsuit. Yeah. Both of them, Bill and Alexander.
I
Good
mean,
looking group of that's a good looking family.
they're very photogenic. They were all made to be movie stars. They're like the Hemsworths.
Yeah, I saw Alexander Skarsgård once at like a movie premiere or something like that, and he literally took my breath away. He was so handsome. Like, it was, you hear people say like getting weak in the knees. Like, I was overcome with how attractive he was. He was a looka.
Yeah, so eventually both he and Colin Firth realize, oh, I shouldn't be here. I should be. It's almost like they're like realizing, oh, I guess I should show up for the end of this movie.
Yeah.
And so they both get on the respective. And so like the big conflict is that this grand opening of this hotel is being threatened by this massive storm that cuts off all the ships and nobody can get there. But of course, somehow they manage to get there and they bring like a fleet of like Greek fishermen with them. And so they all come in on this boat and it's like this just joyous moment of Dancing Queen and everybody just like loses their minds and starts like dancing like maniacs. And it's, yeah, it's everything like a big brash musical number should be, where it's just, everybody's having fun and selling and going for it. And then so at that point, we know the party's going to happen, and we got to tie up like a couple of loose ends from the flashback, because we eventually learn how young Donna learns that she's pregnant. She decides she's going to stay on the island. We learn how she gets out. All of that, like the last half hour, no, it is literally all about Cher at this point.
Share.
Let's talk Cher, who plays Donna's mother, so Sophie's grandmother. Cher famous Cher, and this was noted at the time, only 3 years older than Meryl Streep, but cast as her mother.
It's just so interesting. Like, it's so random that they did that. It's almost like they were like, okay, if we're not gonna have Meryl, we need to have a little bit of Meryl and then like a little bit of someone else who's like just as like iconic and legendary as her. And hopefully that kind of, like meets in the middle kind of thing. But yeah, and she like barely touches on her relationship with her mother in the flashbacks too. I mean, she like, kind of like briefly mentions stuff, but it's not, you don't have this huge backstory of like why their relationship is fraught or whatever. It's just so weird.
Yeah, they don't spend much time at all letting you know about any, I mean, they're like, we don't care. We're just figuring out a way to get them all together at some point. And Cher comes in, and I love she does like that little Cher thing with her, like with her tongue, just like the little like, okay, hey, just so you guys know, it's Cher. Just should just her character's name just should have been Cher. They could have
Right.
just written that as like, hey, Grandma Cher.
Oh my God. I just remember when I can't remember if it was like announced that she was going to be in the movie or if like her being in the trailer was like the announcement of that she was going to. I just remember when everyone found out that Cher was going to be in Mamma Mia, it was just like, this makes no sense, but I'm not going to question it because it's just, it sounds amazing. And it is.
So she enters, and this is the part that threw me off, because like she's coming out, and correct me if I'm wrong here, she is in like full, she almost seems like she's in like full like Lady Gaga cosplay at that moment, right? Like she's got the wig and the big glasses and the all white suit. That gif of her that goes around, that I sent you right before we started this podcast. The first time I saw that, I didn't realize that was Cher. I thought it was Lady Gaga.
Is a pretty spot on impression.
Right.
Lady Gaga would be lucky to be doing what Cher's doing when she's her age. So maybe it's like maybe it was an homage or something. Lady Gaga.
So she comes in, and so she's got to get her song, and that's where we get Fernando, which touches on a brings up a character we haven't talked about yet. We haven't talked about Andy Garcia, who plays like the,
Cienfuegos. Señor Cienfuegos or whatever.
yeah, and we don't learn his name till the end, that his name is Fernando. Obviously, because it's the big religion. Because it's like, I can imagine watching this for the first time and they realize his name's Fernando and everyone's like, oh, they're going to sing Fernando. That's the next song.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, kind of going back to Cher just for a moment.
Yes.
So is she rich? Like, she flies in on a helicopter. Like, I want to know her financial situation because she seems like a woman of wealth. So did Donna come from like a rich family? There's just, I have all these like lingering questions when it kind
of. I mean, that would explain the massive collection of jumpsuits that she owns.
Absolutely. Yeah. She inherited them all from her mom.
Yeah.
But yeah, their dynamic is interesting and their ages are just so off too, where it's like, oh, I met him. It's like, he's not old enough to be your like lover.
No, they met, according to them, they met in 1959, which is like 50 years before that movie. And that's like positing that Andy Garcia is like in his 70s.
Yeah, there's no way.
No.
Last year, 2008 was like Andy Garcia's breakout year as like a sex symbol because he was in Book Club too. He played like a really, like I had never thought twice about Andy Garcia in my life and I saw Book Club and I was like, do I love Andy Garcia now? And then this too, he just, good for him. Late in life, sex symbol.
There's hope for everybody, right? I mean, yeah. So Cara, do you have any knowledge on the backstory of Cher's, is she like a singer herself or do you know, what can you tell us about it?
I don't know anything about that. All I know is I think like old Parker just really wanted her in it and kind of like almost blackmailed her into like taking the part. I think that's another like expanded universe movie we need is, you know, Donna's mom.
We'll get the prequel. We'll do it the same way. We'll get a young Cher. Well, Lady Gaga can play young Cher.
Oh my gosh. I love it. This is perfect.
Good follow-up to A Star Is Born.
There you go. There you go. It's going to create this like multiverse here of, yeah. And I think literally the only reason they made her character rich is that so that Cher can have as grand of a Cher entrance as she can. Like that's like the motivation to get her there. Interestingly enough, Cher handpicked Andy Garcia to play the role of Fernando. That's apparently how much power Cher had to get into this movie. She's like, well, if I'm going to do this movie, who am I working opposite of? And she apparently was on the Andy Garcia hotness train and was like, I want that dude.
Yeah. She kicked it off.
She's a trendsetter.
That's so odd of all the people. That's a very weird choice.
Mm-hmm. But I also love in the duet, it's like, well, we're going to let you sing, Andy, but we're going to drown you just a touch.
Yeah.
It's all about Cher. Like he's singing and it's like, can I hear him?
Yeah. Between that, Fernando and Super Trooper. Oh my God. Mm. It's just so good. Those are two of the best songs from the soundtrack.
Oh no. Yeah, they absolutely are. But before we can get to Super Trooper, we have to get to the moment that just blew my mind. Cause I knew Meryl Streep was going to work her. They were going to figure out some way to get Meryl Streep into this movie, even though they kill her character off in the first 2 minutes because she's advertised. It seemed like a weird choice. I didn't have my money on ghost duet at a baptism.
Yep. Yeah.
I will say though, it seems like another fast forward song, but I saw this movie with my mom, with our mom, and her and I just like during that song just looked at each other and just like held hands and we were just crying and it was so sweet. We were just like, it really like highlights the bond between like mother and daughter, and that's another reason why I love the movie so much. It's such a sweet like mother-daughter love story as well.
Kacey Wilson, she's an actress and she has a podcast called Bitch Sesh. She talked about when the first Mamma Mia came out, her mom had like just passed away or something like that, and she was like, I was so inconsolable, I had to like be escorted out of the theater kind of thing. And I think, and then she saw the second one and she said, you know, and I think like she has a son, she has like two sons now, and so the ghost mother thing. I think she was like, it was really intense for me.
Oh, I bet. Like, yeah. I mean, I think there's, yeah, it's definitely not a fast forward song because there's either two, I think there's either two ways you absorb that scene. And that's either, oh, this is tying me to my mother. And this is, I can feel like this is about that emotional bond and it works. Or the other is Meryl Streep is a freaking ghost.
Yep.
Doing a duet with her daughter at a baptism, which was, you know, sadly that was kind of my big takeaway from the moment, but I get like, but then somehow they did overcome it because like Meryl Streep's just that damn good.
Yeah.
Like she's so good that she's like, I'm a ghost and you don't care. I don't care. Cause I'm gonna make y'all cry in this silly movie where we've had, where we're now about to all be in sequin jumpsuits dancing with each other.
Yeah. It is kind of crazy that it goes from this like very heavy, like, moment and like, okay, like let's have fun. It's like, oh, okay, we're doing it. That's how that's going down.
Yeah, and I appreciate that they at least did it over the credits, which I don't did they do that at the end of Mamma Mia, because I remember the very end was, or did they do it and then roll credits?
I think so. They did. I think it was like a mid credits thing. Okay. From what I can remember, and they did Waterloo,
right?
Where they kind of dressed up in those little like ABBA outfits. And so it's basically that, but like on crack. Like in the first one, it's like, they're just like in a studio or whatever. And this one is much more involved.
No, this one is, oh yeah, this is, they are all deeply involved. All the guys are like doing their best dad drunk at a wedding dances. Like a lot of hip thrusts and like shoulder movements from Pierce Brosnan, and like Stellan Skarsgård's got the deep V, he's thrusting it out there, and everyone's like dancing with their doppelganger versions. And then here comes Ghost Streep dancing with Christine Baranski, and then eventually you get like Meryl and Cher in the same shot together, and it's like, that's what everybody wanted.
It does. I do appreciate that for like the older, for Bill, Sam, and Harry, they're like, we're not going to make you dance too much or sing too much. You guys can literally just like grab beers and sit down, and that's what you'll be doing for years. Mm-hmm. Like that had to have like been one of their ideas. Like, you wouldn't be funny if we, this is what we did.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that was actually what they did. What the director had talked about, what they did for that scene was just like, okay, everybody just kind of go nuts. They literally told that to the cast, is everybody just going to go nuts, and we'll film it all, and then we'll cut it together. You know, with some obvious, like there's some choreographed stuff in there, but yeah, there is a lot of it of, it's just like the cast just screwing around. And I kind of love that because it lets you know, it's like, again, so much, they're just all having so much fun and just embracing kind of the goofy charm that this movie has and sending the audience home happy.
Yeah. That's another pick. If you need another serotonin boost, that's just watch that, and it will immediately make your day better. I'm looking at the Wikipedia for the movie, and the last paragraph, this is how it describes like the baptism and everything. Just make me laugh. It says, 9 months later, Sophie has given birth to a baby boy. Everyone has gathered for his christening, where Tanya flirts with Fernando's brother. Ceremony takes place with Donna's spirit watching over her daughter with pride as the two of them have one final moment before Donna's spirit passes on.
What?
At the end, all of the characters, including Donna and the younger cast, sing Super Trooper at a huge party at Hotel Peloton. That just made me laugh. It's like, her spirit passes on.
So are they suggesting... Is Wikipedia suggesting that like Meryl Streep's spirit was trapped on the Greek island?
I think that's, you could gather. That's what I'm gathering. She had unfinished business. That's why ghosts are ghosts, because of that. So I wonder, I don't know if this is too morbid, but they don't explain how she died, right? It's just kind of like, well, yeah. She died.
Nope. She died of plot.
Plot. Yeah. I wonder probably if they had to give it. I bet it would have been like, she just got sick or something.
Yeah, I love how we're just like talking. I wonder how she died.
How did you? Well, I'm assuming, I mean, it's a fairly remote island, but it seems fairly affluent. I mean, I don't know what the healthcare system is like in Greece.
Yeah.
We're getting too deep in it, guys.
the doctor. She lives on this remote island in Greece. She got sick and go to the doctor, probably.
All right, yeah, but the one thing that I like, because as I was watching the movie and I was kind of following along with like the not with the plot part, but with the musical numbers. I saw that at the end they listed off all the characters, and for a moment I was like, oh, are we gonna have a moment where somehow everyone's gonna be in the movie together and they're just like gonna stop pretending that they're like these two different plots? And like, no, fortunately they just do it kind of as like a curtain call number.
Yeah.
Which just they're like, which is their excuse to get everybody in the same room, which is exactly what you needed, because you know, you gotta have that moment of putting Meryl Streep and Cher in the same room and you know, just watching the younger people interact with their older characters. It's just it's very hard to resist.
So cute. That's like our mom eats that kind of stuff up. That's like they made that for our mom specifically, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, I think that is the target demo of this movie. I mean, I think this was definitely, you know, if nothing else. And I know that because I know my mom loves these movies. She's a big fan of them.
I don't know if you were going to ask this, but I feel like it should be discussed. Kara and I butt heads about this. Of who you actually think the father is. I think it's Bill.
I have very good reasoning. But I want to hear.
I have reasoning too.
Okay, no. I will let you both make your case. So, Amanda, let's start with you. Why do you think it is Bill?
Okay, I think it's Bill because, I mean, first of all, Amanda Seyfried's blonde. She looks like she could be from, you know, Swedish descent. And then also in the first movie, when they're discussing how Donna was able to afford the inn or something like that, Amanda Seyfried and Stellan Skarsgård are talking about this. And she goes, the woman who owned the inn left it to my mom or left the money to my mom or something. He goes, I always heard that money went to family. So there's that. And then the twin thing. Where he was like that twin comment always kind of, you know, I'm like, okay, that's something, but that's my main thing is the money and her hearing that it went to family. So that's my argument.
All right.
Okay.
Karen.
Well, here's my high school debate rebuttal. Amanda Seyfried just looks like Meryl. So she just looks like her mom, right? She doesn't necessarily need to look like her dad. And you are working on the assumption, Amanda, that Meryl knows who the father is.
Yes.
So she knew that she wouldn't have this whole crisis in the first movie of I don't know who her dad is. If she knew it was Bill, and that's why the money went to family. But here is my reasoning why I think Sam is the father. I think Sam is the father because Donna and Sam. From the sequel, we see that they spent multiple days together. Mm-hmm. So statistically, one would assume that they slept together more than once. So statistically, it's more statistically possible that Sam is the father, whereas the other two were just one night stands.
Okay, but I was also reading IMDb trivia. Let me pull it up. Hold on.
See, we've had long.
Amanda, like, we're going to have a falling out over it. Like,
we're going to have a falling out.
Oh, no.
There are clues that Sam isn't Sophie's father. When young Donna meets and gets to know Sam, she often touches/shields her abdomen, all an involuntary reflex pregnant women have, even if they don't realize they're pregnant. Also in the scenes with Sam, I don't know if I believe this, she has gotten noticeably bustier and has what many would refer to as a pregnancy glow.
Okay. I don't know about that.
Oh.
Lou, what do you think?
Okay. You both make very good points. I was going to argue with the who had she spent the most time with. And I guess I need to think about it. So she spends
one night. You just go curveball. You're like, it's Colin Firth.
Right. She only exactly, that's the one. Like, she only spends one night with Harry, but doesn't she have, she goes back to Bill at some point.
I think her and Bill, you're led to believe that they only have like one night together where they were hanging out before, and then he left to go do that race, and then he comes back, and then that's when they sleep together, I think.
Oh, okay. So the first time they got together, they don't sleep together the first time they meet.
Yeah, he's hitting on her and everything.
Okay, because I was counting that as two.
He just gives her a ride to the island and drops her off.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, this is a very busy 5-day period for this woman, by the way. There's a lot going on in like this 5-day time period. So, okay. I mean, yeah, I would have to say, if I'm just going to think logically about it, you're right, Kara, that statistically speaking, it would most likely have to be Sam.
Wow.
So, but I mean, yeah, I'm gonna stick with that. I'm gonna say it's Sam, and I think the other, and I think the rest is just a misdirect.
It's the hill I will die on.
Hey,
Bill, you know, the father.
Stick to your guns. Just, you know, believe what you believe. Okay. Before we move on, do we have any other scenes or performances or moments that we have not touched on that we need to cover?
There's a couple cameos from actual members of ABBA in the film. Mm-hmm. One is, they were in the first movie too, but I think both the men from ABBA make appearances. I know one of them is in the Waterloo scene. He's playing the piano.
Yes.
And I can't remember any other cameos, but I can give you.
The other member is one of the teachers in the beginning, I believe.
Okay.
And I'm not sure because, they're the two that obviously I think worked most hand in hand with the adaptation. So I don't know. I'm not really sure what the status of the other members are. I don't know if they're all still with us or not, or if they're just kind of over the whole ABBA thing or not. But they both managed to get in there. They're the Stan Lees of the Mamma Mia universe. the MMCU, the Mamma Mia Cinematic Universe.
Bring it on. I would love that. Like, each person should get their own like spin-off movie. There you go. Each like the young and old versions. Mm-hmm. Like 6 movies right there. I think it's interesting that like Sam left because he was engaged to that woman, right? And he's like, I need to like go and clear my head. If I was engaged to somebody and they were like, I need to go to Greece by myself, clear my head before we get married, I'd be like, excuse me? I'd be like, you either want to do this or you don't. And then I like how he just kind of gives up. Like, he goes to see her, and then that woman's like, she's off with like the hottest, you know, boat racer in Europe, blah, blah, blah. And he's like, okay. And he just gives up. I find that shocking. Mm-hmm. Gonna try a little bit harder.
Yeah. To win back.
I also got a kick out of the passport guy.
Oh yeah.
He was funny. And he had a little flirtation with Colin Firth, and he was kind of like a little bit of, you know, comedic relief a little bit. Not that they needed it, but I enjoyed that as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the one thing that was surprising when I was looking is I didn't realize there was such a big gap between these two movies, is that there was a decade between these two movies, which doesn't seem right, but I guess time just has just gone by a lot faster as I've gotten older. But I don't remember the original Mamma Mia being that old.
I just loved it because it was like, you know, Mamma Mia came out, it was really popular, did well, and then all of a sudden they're like, there's going to be a Mamma Mia sequel, and it was like, what? Like, it's not like people were clamoring for it. You know, like, there are certain movies nowadays where people just beg for sequels or prequels or whatever. And they just, all of a sudden, it's like no one really wanted it, but it's like no one didn't want it. It was just kind of appeared one day, and I think we didn't know we needed it. I think Kara said that once, and I was like, yep.
I didn't necessarily want it, but I needed it, you know?
And now we don't know how we ever went without it.
Exactly.
So let's take this then to our guilt meter. on a scale of 1 to 5, five shame spirals, one being you either love this movie, you love this movie so much you want everybody to see it, all the way to 5, meaning you either don't like this movie, or if you do, there's nobody you could recommend it to. You will just watch it alone by yourself. Where does Mamma Mia, Here We Go Again rank on the guilt meter? Kara, I've got a sneaking suspicion this is going to rank fairly high for you.
It's a 1 for me because no shame, no shame in my game about this movie. I love it so much.
Amanda, how about you?
I'm the same. Like, if you sit down and watch this movie and don't enjoy yourself, like, there's probably something wrong with you. Like, is it the most, you know, perfect movie ever? Actually, you know what? No, maybe it is. No, it has its little moments and little things, but it's just such an enjoyable experience that if, like I said, if you can't enjoy yourself or crack a smile during this, I don't know what to tell you. There's no hope for you.
Yeah, I'm probably going to go more like a 1.5 to a 2. I'm really glad I saw it. and I had way more fun than I thought I was going to have. And again, the fact that it basically is The Godfather Part 2 in musical form tickles me to no end. Because, you know, Meryl Streep is basically, you know, she's a better Marlon Brando. I'm not even going to say she's like Marlon Brando. She's better than Marlon Brando, but treating her that with that same kind of her character with that same kind of reverence. But yeah, I think what I said earlier, is what I stick with, is that I think the first 30 minutes and the last 30 minutes of this movie are just buck wild. And if you can't enjoy those, like you said, Amanda, that's on you. I do think there's some stuff in the middle, there's some songs there where you're like, yeah, I can see why they waited till the sequel to roll these ones out. So not all the musical numbers landed for me, but the ones that did, boy, howdy, did they land. And especially like when you're throwing in Meryl Streep as a ghost and Cher looking like Lady Gaga and Stellan Skarsgård deep V, like what more do you need out of a movie? So, yeah, no, I would say there's some people I know that I wouldn't ever be like, yeah, you know what? You should see Mamma Mia too. But I think to anybody who like maybe was out on after the first one, I was like, why do we need this? You ladies are exactly right. We maybe didn't ask for it, but you'd be remiss now that it's there to not see it.
Yeah. It's definitely one of those movies where if you see it on cable, turn it on, you know, just even mm-hmm. if you just watch a number or two or whatever, it's perfect kind of movie to just, you can either sit down and watch it and be super engrossed in it, but it's also a great movie to just kind of have on in the background, and it's versatile. It's so versatile.
It is. Yeah, absolutely. All right. So, ladies, let us know what you are up to now. I know you're always busy with the Disneyland Foodies Instagram account. Any new updates or what's going on with you two ladies?
Well, I'm actually headed to Disney World. I'm not sure when this is coming up, but I'm going the second week of July. It's kind mm-hmm. of a quick little trip, so I'll be sharing all kinds of stuff from that trip. It's going to be just as hot as... what's a Calicari? I'm sure it'll be just as hot there in Florida as Greece. But no, very excited for that. We just went to Galaxy's Edge for the first time over the weekend. So we have a lot to share from that. But yeah, we're just kind of doing our thing. Keep going to Disneyland. And hopefully Kara will come back again soon. And yeah.
All right. And where can the people find you if they want to experience all of that Disney fun?
So we're on Instagram and Facebook at Disneyland Foodies, all one word. Give us a follow. Send us a message if there's something you think we should try, or just shoot us a little DM and we can chat. And yeah.
All right. Kara, how about you? Do you got anything you want to add?
Nope. I'm just part of the Disneyland Foodies craziness. yeah.
All right. Yeah. If you haven't followed them, you absolutely must. It's always fun to see what you're up to and all the different cool stuff that you get to see and eat and enjoy. So absolutely, definitely check them out. And As always, you can find me on Twitter at the fake Lou Hare. You can tell me your thoughts. Who do you think the father is in Mamma Mia? Let's all weigh in on the great national debate. But you can follow everything that we're doing on for the Front Row Network on our Facebook page, the Front Row Network, or at Front Row Reviews with a Z on Twitter. You can also now, if you are listening to this for the first time through the Guilty Pleasures app, you can find us and everything we're doing over at nprillinois.org. We've started partnering with them, and we're on Spotify for the first time. So that's very exciting. So if you're not an iTunes person or you want easier access, it's all there. Go and enjoy. And as always, if you like us and if you review us on iTunes and give us a 5-star review, in the review, if you request a movie, we'll do it on Guilty Pleasures. We're up to date on all our listener requests. We just did Drop Dead Gorgeous. We did Wild Wild West. So bring it on. We've got a vacancy. So what do you want to do? And we'll do it. You can also find us on our website, frnpod.com. I had an article up coming up soon, if it's not already up, about the year 1994, which I think is the greatest movie year of all time. And I lay out some points and we'll have a podcast to go with that, partnering soon, and also a bracket battle coming up of the greatest sports movie of all time. So that, in addition to full disclosures on all the big summer movies, everything that you want, we got you covered. Front Row Network is busy. We're in full swing for the summer. So please enjoy everything we got. I want to thank you ladies for coming on again. This was a lot more enjoyable to talk about, a lot more enjoyable to watch. And so thank you for recommending this movie. I had a blast doing it. And I know we're going to probably have you back. If not sooner, we're going to have you back in time for the Charlie's Angels reboot, so we can talk Amanda's favorite guilty pleasure, Charlie's Angels Full Throttle.
Yep.
Which is yet another sequel I have not seen. So I'm oh my God, excited. I'm very excited to dive in on that.
I've seen that movie like an embarrassing number of times. That's a cable movie I throw on quite a bit. So
excellent. So thank you again for coming on, and we will hopefully talk to you sooner than later and get you back on. And thank you all for tuning in and enjoying this podcast. And so until next time, for the Front Row Network, I'm Lou Hare.
I'm Amanda Hasica.
I'm Kara Hasica.
And as always, we'll see you in the front row.
Bye.